Welcome to the Weekend Write-In, where writers read flash fiction.
Facing him was a very large creature with an enormous head full of antlers.
Hey, I'm trying to get home for Christmas. Can we move this along a little?
So this was Christmas, our first Christmas meal on our own farm.
Ruby Red had asked me to give his daughter his secrets, but not anyone else.
I'm Sovon Drake.
And I'm John Edwill. What is it? Are you all right?
I've got a stomach ache from eating too much pie.
Already? But there's almost a month to go until Christmas. You can't have been to that many parties yet.
Well, we've just had Thanksgiving here in the States. I've had turkey, potatoes, cranberries, and then there are all the pies. Apple, pumpkin, pecan.
Oh, stop. It's no wonder you've got indigestion.
And then there were all the people we had to visit. Friends, family, more family, and everywhere we went, people were offering us more food.
Oh, I know what you mean. Every time I go to visit my family in Ireland, they're offering me cups of tea and slices of cake.
Ugh, cake.
And when it comes to Christmas, there's enough alcohol to float a battleship.
Ugh, stop, I can't take any more.
That's what I tell them, but do you think they listen?
Look, could we talk about something else, so long as it's not about food or drink?
How about some stories? Those might settle your stomach.
Hi, I'm Tom Walborn. I went back into my archives for this story. It was first published in December 2016 on Amazon's Write-In website. The prompt was Fauna. Here is Unexpected Company. Merry Christmas, sweetheart. Merry Christmas, Sarah. Would you like your present now? What the heck was that? Tom was reacting to a cacophony of sounds from the garage. You stay here, he told Sarah. I'll go have a look. He swung open the connecting door to the garage and took a step in, only to take two sudden steps back, colliding with Sarah, who was close behind him. Facing him was a very large creature with an enormous head full of antlers. Hanging by a wire handle from one of the antler points was a paint can. The rest of the paint cans were on the floor, as was the metal shelving that previously held them. Behind all of this, a very distraught house elf was wringing his hands and moaning, "Oh my, oh my!" Baldy, what is all this? What has happened here? What is this moose doing in my garage? The creature glared at Tom with red-rimmed eyes and took a step forward. Steam came from his nostrils. Slobber dripped from his mouth and pooled on the concrete floor. Boss, not a moose. He didn't mean that, Blitzen. He just never met a northern reindeer before. Boss? Missus? As Baldy had just noticed Sarah, wide-eyed, standing behind Tom. This is Blitzen. He had a little trouble last night and needed a place to stay until transport arrives. Tom said, Well, does he have to stay in my garage? Sarah moved past Tom to see if the reindeer was hurt. Baldy was explaining that it just wouldn't do to have the wee children seeing an injured reindeer, especially today, while Sarah was carefully looking at the leg that Blitzen was favoring. Sarah, Tom stepped forward again, don't get too close to that beast. He may be dangerous. He took a sudden step back as Blitzen turned on him with another glare and snorted a big glob of something at his feet. Sarah told Tom to fetch some ice packs and an ace bandage from the closet. I think it's just a sprain, she told Blitzen. Tom spent most of the rest of the day sulking while Sarah fussed over the injured reindeer. This is not how I plan to spend Christmas Day, he complained to the elf. Why my garage? Well, as it turns out, I'm the only elf in a 100-mile radius. And when the big guy asks a favor... How are they going to get him home? Some sort of magical sleigh? No, a horse trailer. It'll be here after dark. They were watching a movie after dinner when Baldy stuck his head in. All loaded. I'm going to ride with him a ways. All right, I'll put the car in the garage. Tom stood up. With alarm on his face, Baldy said, Oh, okay, gotta go. And he was gone. The eye-watering malodor hit him like a physical blow after two steps into the garage. Blitzen had left one final present.
Christmas Shopping by Paul Wesley. I was walking down 6th Avenue. The street was crowded with holiday shoppers weaving left and right, trying to avoid each other, Everywhere you looked, you could see their breath condensing into little clouds as they hurried along. A soft white snow was just starting to settle. Don't you love this time of year? Hey, I'm trying to get home for Christmas. Can we move this along a little?
Sorry, Detective. Okay if I call you Joe.
So, I was approaching 50th. Radio City was all beautifully lit up and there was a line around the block waiting to get in. There was this one man in line playing a harmonica. I couldn't recognise the tune, but it...
Bally!
Oh, sorry, where was I? Right, Radio City. I saw the rockets there a few years...
The accident! What can you tell me about the accident?
Oh dear me, I do get sidetracked a lot lately. The accident. So, I was looking at Radio City and all the people, then I heard a woman scream. I spun around and right at that moment the horse knocked her to the ground. I ran over to her right away. I do hope she's going to be okay.
Yes, yes, she's fine. Mild concussion. She should be released in the morning.
Oh, that's wonderful news. I can't imagine what it must have been like seeing a horse charging towards her. I remember this one time...
Sir! I want to know why the woman told us you kept saying, I'm so sorry, this is all my fault. You thought it was your fault?
Well, yes, at least I think so.
I don't understand. Why?
I can't see how else it could have happened. The horse still had all its gear on. It was surely from one of the horse and carriage rides that tourists use to go around the park. Have you ever done it? It's so much fun. The clippity-clop of their hooves as they trot along and the time of year so romantic with the snow snuggled under a nice warm...
Yes! The horse broke free from the carriage and went charging down 6th Avenue. But what does the horse have to do with you?
Oh dear, sorry Joe. I see the holidays can't come soon enough for you. Well, the horse was clearly spooked. They don't go bolting off like that unless something unusual happened.
Yes, we know that. Sorry. Yes, we know that. But why would that be your fault? You were half a mile away.
Because that's where I parked.
You parked near the horse and carriage rides?
Yes, it's very difficult to find parking in Manhattan. I'm sure you know that more than anybody.
But why would your car spook a horse?
Not my car, Joe. My reindeer and sleigh. People can't see them, but some animals can. The horse must have.
I see. Okay. Thank you, sir. You're free to go.
Merry Christmas, Joe.
Root and Branch by John Nedwell. The first time I saw the family trees, I was overwhelmed. Everybody knew they existed, but to be in the orchard where they grew? Oh, there were hundreds of them, arranged in long rows, their branches heavy with red amniotic sacs. The air was filled with the sounds of the newly harvested wailing and mewling, and with the stench of placental blood and meconium. Dr. Sheen grasped my arm. Magnificent, isn't it? I nodded. That's one way of putting it. So this is where we all came from. Well, it makes a change from being brought by a stork or being found under a cabbage. The doctor chuckled at his joke. Can I see my family tree? I asked. I don't want to sound like... Oh, no, don't worry, Dr. Sheen reassured me. It's only natural to be curious about where you come from. Healthy, even. Now, let's see. He tapped my number into his watch, and a small map of the orchard appeared above his wrist. It's over there. Shall we go? I followed the doctor through the groves, past the technicians tending the trees in their sterile suits, until we arrived at one that was indistinguishable from the hundreds around it. Like them, this one had a trunk of glistening wood flesh, with about 24 branches coming off it, each one bearing about 4 or 5 amniotic sacs in different stages of development. Beneath the semi-transparent membranes, I could see small forms, my siblings. I reached out to touch one, to feel it squirm and let it know it wasn't alone, but my gloved hand was slapped away. Not a good idea, Dr. Sheen chided me, but not unkindly. We wouldn't want any harm to come to your sib, would you? Ooh, no. I lowered my hand to my side, but continued to stare at the fetus dangling from the branch, fascinated by it. I'm sorry. I should have known better. Don't worry. the doctor led me away from the tree. No harm done. A thought struck. Dr. Sheen, what about your tree? Have you ever stared at yours and wondered? Dr. Sheen stopped. The expression on his face was unreadable. Well, he said after a moment's thought, I come from a very old family. His countenance lightened and an impish smile played about the corners of his mouth. You might say that I have roots.
Second Act by Tyra Pendragon. Holly Kensington had invited me to her first show. I asked Victoria to tag along. Her father would have been proud of her. She was part of a burlesque show in Ballard. Holly was the star attraction and would be singing a variety of show tunes while showing off her assets. She'd been quite exhilarated to see her father's drag performances a few months back on the flash drive I'd given her. I loved it when a ghost got a happy ending. How did you meet this singer? Victoria asked as we walked down a long stairway to the basement theater. Her father came to me and asked me to share his secret life with her, I said. What's the secret? As we reached the theater, I handed in our tickets. I thought about what to share with her. Ruby Red had asked me to give his daughter his secrets, but not anyone else. He had been worried about how his wife would react to his performances. I hate to be a tease, but I'm not at liberty to say, I said. We grabbed seats in the front row and Victoria went to get a glass of wine. I've never been much of a drinker. It was hard enough dealing with ghosts, sober. The lights dimmed and she came back to watch the show. I'd never been to a burlesque before. The performers were amazing. The theme of the show was movies and their depiction of women and girls. The first woman did a rocking version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow as an adult Dorothy. The next act was a dance to Love is Like a Heat Wave, with the performer dressed as Carrie. Holly was the finale. She was dressed as Sugarcane from Some Like It Hot and sang I Want to Be Loved by You. Everything was going swimmingly when I heard a second voice, a male voice singing along. It sounded familiar. Who is that? Victoria asked. You can hear it? I hear a guy singing along softly. She looked around the darkened theater for the source. Some ghosts could make themselves heard by everyone. It was Ruby Red, aka Philip Kensington, and it was getting louder and louder. He was a fine singer, but not as good as his daughter. The audience muttered for the intruder to shut up. I looked around to find the ghost. I spotted him to the right of the stage, and I waved. He waved back and kept singing. I gestured for him to come over. He shook his head, kept singing. I stood and hurried to him. The rest of the audience couldn't see him, but they could sure hear him. You're ruining your daughter's act, I hissed the spirit. You need to stop. But it's so wonderful. I don't want to, he said. Look at the stage. Holly was coming to the end of the song. She sang her heart out, and now that Philip had stopped distracting the crowd, they hung on every word. Philip listened and smiled as the music faded, and he disappeared with it. Holly was a big hit.
Burlap Bag Christmas by Norval Simonson, as told to Joyce Holt. My first memory of a home, back about 1933 or 34, was on what was called a desert improvement claim. This was in western Wyoming, 20 miles or so south of Thermopolis, and the homestead ran up into the hills in rugged wild country. On the hilly east side of our property, there was a cutting for the railroad. A crew had gone up and down the tracks, taking out the ties that were beginning to deteriorate, and putting in new ones. They just tossed the old ones over the side to be burned later. Dad got permission from the foreman to salvage them. Dad used those ties to build our cabin. He dug it right into the hillside that protected it on the west and north sides from the cold winter winds that blew through there. The area lived up to its name of Wind River. There was a wind blowing most of the time, and during the winter that wind would be 30 below zero. I don't know what the chill factor would have been. The cabin had 3 rooms, the kitchen in the middle, Mother and Dad's bedroom on the east, and another bedroom on the west. Off the north side of the kitchen was a small cellar to keep stuff reasonably cool, like vegetables, potatoes, and, when we had it, meat. The roof was made of ties laid at a slight angle, covered with sheet metal, found in the town dump, laid up sort of like shingles. Over the top of that was clay, about 4 to 6 inches of it, and then sand on top of that. This carried away almost all of the rain. Now and then, in a bad storm, we'd get a few leaks. Sounds crude, don't it? But it was warm in the winter when those cold winds blew across the river and up through the trees. We had plenty of firewood there, and we had a wood stove in the kitchen. And in my mother's bedroom, a 50-gallon barrel, with the doors and all of a potbelly stove riveted to it. You could lift the top of that and put in a great big chunk of wood on top of a hot fire, and that wood would burn almost all night, kept the place nice and warm. Dad and my brothers would gather dead wood, split it for firewood, and take it to town to sell to get the money for flour and sugar and lard and gasoline. As for clothing, my mother made most of our clothes on a foot-treadled sewing machine. The bags that the flour came in often had patterns printed on them, and she made shirts for us boys and dresses for the girls, and cut down discarded clothes for our trousers. My brothers and sisters and I had discovered a lookout point up on the hillside, where we'd have a great view of the train coming through the cutting. We could look right into the cabin of the engine when it passed. The engineer enjoyed breaking the monotony of his day, too. He'd see us coming, he'd salute us with his whistle, wave to us as he went by, and we'd wave back and watch him pass, then go back down to the house. One Christmas he tooted long and loud. We ran up the hill to our lookout. There came the train. We saw the engineer swinging a burlap bag out the window, round and around, winding up. As he approached the cut, he tossed the sack. That bag was just full of toys and clothes and stuff that we couldn't afford. That was like Santa Claus riding a train. After that, you can bet we never once missed waving to our friend, the engineer.
A Dubious Christmas Down Under by Christine Larson. Narrated by Sylvan Drake. Never really a choice, was there? Oh no, not once the power went off. And stayed off. I pull a long face and roll my eyes. An involuntary groan escapes me, echoed by a hearty sigh from Canute, as we remember the year we were going to my brother's in the city for Christmas lunch. The event demanded much planning, well in advance. It's no mean feat to change your routine milking to try to accommodate something as special as Christmas, home or away. Our usual early morning get up and go was delayed by what? A couple of hours? Canute answers. He folds his arms, clearly showing he's still in denial of how our most careful dreams and schemes fell apart at the seams. We were so damn sure we had it all worked out. Plan A was a normal milking on Christmas Eve, before the cows faced a lengthy stretch between milkings on Christmas Day, when a later morning start, maybe as late as 8:30 a.m., was planned, followed by our usual chores in double-quick order. Some, like the feeding out hay, was done the night before, and that paddock locked up. Next, spruce-up time and off to our festive lunch in the city 2.5 hours away. Our only regret was that we needed to be home before dark to successfully bring the cows in for their latest ever milking. All began to unravel with a power break at our all-electric dairy. No, not today. Please, please, no. This is impossible. It can't be happening. We looked at each other in deepest despair. Back to the house, and a desperate phone call to our electricity supplier confirmed what we dreaded to hear. It was hopeless. The duty officer had no idea when supply would be resumed. On this day of the year, he said reluctantly and somewhat sheepishly, The downtime is totally unpredictable. It's anyone's guess how long it'll take to round up the guys to check the lines. And then find where the problem is. Sorry, but I can't even make a guesstimate. Contingency plans were desperately thought up, examined, and most discarded. Through phone calls to our family, we kept up a positive and optimistic attitude and belief that we would only be a little late. No problem, said my brother cheerfully. Just drive safely. With no milking possible during our enforced wait time, we hastily reversed the order of our chores, like giving greedy calves their buckets of milk, hens fed and water topped up, extra meals readied for dogs and cats. Phew! So far, so good. Back in the dairy, Knut hopefully flicked a switch. In the deafening silence, his eyes reluctantly met mine. Still no power. He sighed heavily. Maybe having our bath now would cheer us up a bit? I knew this would be risky business, probably inviting all manner of disasters of the messy kind. But it was possible we might get lucky just this once. I suppose so. His tone was extremely doubtful. Still, he began ticking off the potential for our dairy clothing to keep us clean. Our beanies will cover our hair, okay, overalls, big dairy apron, and rubber boots for the rest. Maybe we could wash up bright and shiny again after milking. I pushed myself hard to sound enthusiastic. Better to be actually doing something positive instead of moping around feeling sorry for ourselves, I said, even almost believing it. As expected, the bath relieved much of the worsening strain in our bodies and souls. We had cheered up as our best clothes were laid out, Christmas presents packed into the car, and drinks put back into the refrigerator to continue chilling until the last possible moment. With this flurry of activity done, it was back to the dairy, muttering prayers and pleas for a happy outcome. But nothing had changed. Still no power. Another phone call to my brother with a news update about a revised plan of action. Thankfully, another Christmas eggnog or two helped keep him jolly through all these bad tidings. Plan B roared into the scene. The last resort, the monster. I feel the tension build behind my eyes once again. It was an early vintage petrol engine to power the milking machine and the milk vat's refrigeration and agitator in an emergency when all else failed. It was seriously a monster. So hard to start, you'd wonder which of you would bust apart first. So loud you had to shout yourself hoarse to be heard. So smelly from fumes that couldn't escape fast enough that you were near asphyxiation with teary eyes to make it an even more emotional experience. The cows were terrified of the monster, sharing their gut feelings most generously. My nose twitches with its own indelible memories. A combination of pleas, bribery, threats, and in the end, brute force enticed the poor girls into the dairy to be milked. In their abject terror, most tried to hold back their milk flow with varying degrees of success. Some expressed their outrage by lashing out with deadly aim towards anything approaching their udders. These were the Helicon days when we manually washed teats thoroughly before putting the milking cups on, whilst our girls simultaneously performed quite impressive dancing entertainment for us. Automatic anythings waited for fatter pockets. Luckily, we were lighter on our feet back then. I chuckle as I picture our ducking and weaving to avoid flying hooves and other unmentionables. Against all odds, we were winning, until the monster abruptly coughed and spluttered a few times and expired. A loud, grievous, and smoky death meant no resuscitation was possible. Colorful epithets rang out loudly in the sudden embarrassing silence of the dead monster. Our stomping around was as heavy as our hearts, accompanied by the whole herd's mooing protests. There was no choice but to accept the inevitable. It was, after all, Christmas Day. Everything was closed and empty, and everyone was somewhere important, sharing all manner of special food and drinks and presents. Everyone except us. Plan C was sadly and reluctantly conceived. Our only option was to let the cows out into a small paddock to wait, clean the dairy to make it possible to milk the rest of the cows when power was resumed, and phone my brother once again to ask them to please not delay their lunch. We'll definitely make it later in the afternoon, I said through gritted teeth. It took much to summon up my last reserves of courage and cheerfulness. Was it just my imagination, or did he sound tinnily tight-lipped when he agreed? Now was the time to simply wait calmly for however long it was going to take and make some lunch. Yes, well, the refrigerator yielded some frites and cheese, a few slices of bread that had seen better days, tomato sauce, and some pickles. The decision was made for us. The choice for Christmas lunch would be sandwiches. not even toasted. Imagine pre-microwave days having a large chest freezer full of solidly frozen meat and vegetables with no way to thaw them. So this was Christmas, our first Christmas meal on our own farm. Not quite according to master plan, not according to any plan at all. The old adage, it's no use crying over spilt milk, had rarely been so appropriate, becoming a saying we would use more than a few times in the decade ahead. We didn't even care that it would have to be up again before dawn for the next day's milking. Canute arches one eyebrow. Were we keen or what? Before dawn, I repeat. Funny how heroic a dawn awakening seemed before we had kids. We exchanged knowing glances. We'd had so much to learn. Back then, the unimaginable bliss of a break beckoned. To skip the night milking altogether, enjoy ourselves into the evening, and come home as late as we choose, the cold reality of a pre-dawn start next day would still inevitably await us, but that mattered not at all. A whole milking off? No price was too high to pay for such a luxury. At long, long last, on this most unusual Christmas day, the power was restored. We milked the rest of the herd with electricity and alacrity, had another bath, washing and scrubbing away all evidence of our traumas from the dairy. No success in the stay clean department, sadly. Finally, a joyous phone call to my long-suffering brother. We're on our way. And we were. From this moment on, we enjoyed nothing but pleasure for the next happy hours of celebration. A safe trip brought us to a joyous late afternoon and Christmas evening dinner with our beloved family, and some extremely unusual dinner conversation with stories of our never-a-dull-moment life to share. As always, the descriptions grew much funnier in the telling than they had been in reality, embellished more than a little with the assistance of the odd drop of Christmas cheer. A novel, holy day, indeed. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Weekend Write-In Podcast. For more episodes and links to more work by these authors, go to our website at www.weekendwritein.wordpress.com. The Weekend Write-In Podcast is co-hosted, produced, and edited by John Nedwell and Sovan Drake. In this episode, royalty-free music is from festlionstudios.com, sound effects from BBC Sound Effects Archive and freesound.org.
So, how do you feel after those?
Better, thank you. I don't have a stomach ache anymore. In fact, if anything, I'm feeling rather peckish. I think there's still some leftovers. Come and join me. Here's a large slice of pie.
Pie's good.
And don't forget the heavy whipping cream on top. Ooh, and try some cold stuffing.
Cold stuffing?
And plenty of turkey. Here, have this whole leg. Go on, eat it up. Mmm, it's delicious.
Excuse me. I'm not feeling too good.
Look, it's totally acceptable to undo the top button of your pants, you know. See, some people just can't take the holidays.